to use my alien alias name.
I promise to use your alien alias name.
It's the same as this one. But okay. You just have to write in parentheses, alien alias.
I'll tell you what, one of the things I really appreciate about the Night Sky Sangha is the movie tips.
Oh, yeah.
I heard you talking about Ex Machina. I got that video. Boy, that's one of the best videos I've seen for ages.
I know.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
I watched one.
Do movies, food, guru commentary. We keep everyone up to date.
Excellent.
On, you know, who's who and who's not who.
Okay. I saw a movie last night called I think it's called Sicario.
Yes.
You seen that?
No.
Oh, Ripper. Mm. Fantastic. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah. I mean, I like chasing drug dealers with automatic weapons.
Mm. Well, this is, yeah. That's what it is, yeah. Yeah. Benito Del Toro, I think mm-hmm. it is. Look it.
Yeah. He's scary.
Yeah. A gripping movie, though. Unusually gripping.
Nice.
Yes.
We just saw this new Easter movie, Risen.
New who movie?
Easter. It's Easter, right? Time, more or less.
It about Jesus.
It's about Jesus. It's more about a Roman soldier. I forget his title. Who gets involved in the finality of the death of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And in locking down the tomb with ropes and sealing wax. I mean, like, mm-hmm. you know, like you'd stamp a letter.
Any other fancy stuff?
That was it. Ropes and sealing wax or something. And then he posts two of his guards to keep an eye on the tomb so that to keep Jesus's fanatical followers from stealing the body and claiming that he rose again.
Okay.
Anyway, after they're running around all of Rome trying to find the cadaver, the Sanhedrin, you know, who were the Jewish,
and
spiritual politicos that wanted to keep a lid on all this shit, were forcing these two guards to tell stories about being attacked by Jesus's followers and held at spear point while they, you know, ushered the body away. All of it was a lie in exchange for gold. So the Roman soldiers doing all of this exhaustive research, and people are being threatened and bodies are being dug up and, you know, whatever they could possibly do to suppress the miracle of a man who rose from the dead. And he finally breaks into a home, and there's Jesus sitting with his disciples in the flesh, showing his, you know, wounds and his spear wound, and laughing and carrying on, having a nice little, you know, Hebraic satsang.
Uh-huh.
He hits the wall and he just slinks down to the floor and he's like, oh God. And anyway, so it was fun. It was the story told more or less through his eyes and his experience.
Right.
You know, dealing with the catharsis of the Son of the Living God.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So is it like, do you reckon it's a kind of Christian-friendly movie, and Christians all like it?
Yeah. I didn't see anything in there that would trouble, you know, their sentiment or faith. Okay. Yeah, it was fun.
They're a strange lot.
They're a strange lot.
They are a strange bunch. I live with one.
Mm.
Not cohabiting or anything, but I live in a house with a strong Christian. Whoa.
Yeah.
I meet quite a few of them. It's just amazing their resilience to it's not amazing, but it's like the program, the kind of program that is You know, it's like its purpose is to repel any attempt to any attempt to invite them to think about what they're saying in, you know, outside of the believing of what they're saying.
The believing part is like 5%. The other 95% is to defend the belief.
That's like the entire American population. Even if they don't consider themselves to be Christian, they're still Christian.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter what your faith is. It works the same.
Yeah, that's for the English population too. Me too.
I assume it to be the same. I just, you know, don't know.
Yeah.
You know, faith in the Christ is a potent medicine, potent drug, and that kind of ardent faith employed by, you know, a human becomes, you know, a tool, can become a tool, and often becomes a tool of violence.
Tool of what? Of violence, yeah. I'm right.
Yeah. I mean, for those weird, miserable seekers who I feel more comfortable with than, you know, being around evangelical Christians, you know, there's a, I don't know, maybe kind of a self-effacing, casual or authentic crying out for, get me the fuck out of here, I can't stand myself anymore. And of course, I always side with that. But there's a difference, you know, socio-politically speaking, between Gnostic realization, Gnostic self-realization, and faith-based living.
And what based living?
Faith.
Oh, faith-based living.
Faith-based living, yeah.
Gnostic realization, historical Gnostic realization, or current? Is there any?
Well, they're the same, you know.
Yeah. Okay, Gnostic realization, you're talking about realization.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Right, whatever that means.
Yes.
Being completely undefended and you could say exonerated from the repercussions of whatever life brings to your door is an enviable destination for aspirants and differs not an iota from, you know, thy will be done. Mm. How could it? You know?
Yes, I would imagine that thy will be done as a kind of, any kind of ideology, as opposed to, I'm guessing here, as opposed to a...
Wayne Lickerman uses it, Ramesh used it.
Well, anyone can use it, I mean, obviously, but I have no idea, if someone else uses thy will be done, I have no idea what that means to them, but... what I seem to notice is that, you know, it's not what happens in my experience or field. Mm-hmm. Even if I'd like it to be, I've no idea what it means in, you know, other than as an idea.
Yes.
Except that it sometimes becomes really obvious that that's always what's happening anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
That's weird.
That's all that's happening anyway.
And that's a weird, kind of dichotomy to kind of...
Regardless of our enjoyment or protestation, thy will be done is all that's happening anyway.
Mm. It's weird, that, isn't it? And yet, you know, it's like, what was it? I remember, like, sometime in the early hours of this morning, last night, it just occurred to me that this, you know, how the mind kind of wanders. And suddenly there was this kind of noticing, or this idea, but it was, you know, it was really kind of rooted. Was it like, fuck? It's like a human being is absolutely no more significant than an amoeba or a fucking ray of sunshine, or this idea that human beings have some kind of, this is part of the old, you know, the old programming, that human beings have some kind of special significance.
Yeah, the movement and flow of meaning, parsing pattern recognition, inventorying the palette of experience, creates the ready-made, on tap myth of differentiation and preference, which is the application ongoingly of significance. You know, you can scratch your ass and it's not significant, or you can scratch your ass and find a boil and all of a sudden it's, you know, significant.
Funny you should say that.
Yeah, see? I will be done. Yeah, I mean, you know, most human interaction is downstream of the shock value of, you know, presence, because we entrain each other through the habit of reference. So we're basically trading, we're playing ping pong with unreality by sharing opinions and various forms of gossip, or hypothetical situations, or what happened to us, what's happening to us, what will happen to us, and what we plan on doing about it, which is just, you know, a wandering form of hysteria, a wandering form of free association. We're not conscious of the full palette of being with ourselves or being together in a non-conceptual way. And as we discover what it is to feel thy will be done in its Gnostic or secular or devotional faith-based ways, we might begin to discover a broader palette of present experience, which is immersive, which is liberating, which is weird, lusciously so. And then our tendency for fanaticism, hypothetical anecdotal hysteria, softens, matures.
Sorry, say that again? Then off.
I don't know if I could.
The fanaticism for
anecdotal and hypothetical projection.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Imagining that you have views and that you know things.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Presenting yourself to yourself through the lens of imagination.
Yeah.
Which is mostly memory and opinion, and preference, bracing, right?
Yeah.
From the point of view of, you know, I, me, my, as the body. I, me, my, as the body born. Living superficially. So the yoga, no matter what you call it, is a reconsideration of the textures of presence. Being sensitive to a wider palette that is not overcome or overwhelmed by anecdotal and hypothetical projection. Seeing that nothing happened to me prior to this moment, that's not imagination. Nothing's actually happening to me now that I can meaningfully report or record. And so, how could I be all that invested, you know, in a future that I can't control anyway? Except through, you know, lamentation, supplication, and faith. Right? Being terrified because I'm at risk all the time of an unfriendly God, of the whims of an unfriendly God, right? Terrified of the whims of an unfriendly God, of an unfriendly universe, I beg, borrow, steal, supplicate, and practice faith that bad shit won't happen to me. And if bad shit doesn't happen to me, then my faith in Jesus is a win. If bad shit does happen to me, at first I have to up my faith so that even while bad shit's happening to me, I'm not upset about it. And I can keep that going, or at some point I might lose faith in God or Jesus or reality because it's kicking my ass well beyond my capacity to deal with it, to cope with it, to integrate it. You know, then I have, let's say, a dark night of the soul for 5 minutes or 5 years, and maybe something will come of that, maybe not. And all of this occurs, right, in one's experiential imagination. I mean, shit's always hitting the fan, and everything is liquidating before your very eyes. But we pretend that that's not happening. it's only when my portfolio goes down that I think something bad is happening.
What's your portfolio? I don't get that.
Well, my investments, whether my financial investments, my secular and spiritual and somatic investments, my clothing, my car, my shoes. The people that like me, the people that don't.
I've got nothing. Nobody likes me.
Nice.
It's amazing.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's nice to know that nobody likes you.
It's great. I mean, I don't want them to, you know, it's like, I'm really glad to be not in no benefit.
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, if someone, you know, I have a few kind of mutual deals with a few people of, you know, various kind of where we participate in liking each other for the convenience of it.
Yes.
It's like, I don't know about anyone else, but it's like my brain for want of a better word, for wherever this stuff comes from, wherever thoughts are, it's like a kind of, it's like a Tourette's, you know, it's got Tourette's syndrome. And if I verbalize the stuff the thoughts that churn out in any situation, I'd be dead. People would just kill me. It's like, it is just a super critic.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it makes me laugh. It's like I'm driving along the road and it's like.
Yes.
Wear a
t-shirt that says, please don't ask me to speak.
Oh, I tried that mode, and I got the other day, and it was like, are you depressed? I'm like, probably.
Oh, yeah. Worse than you could imagine. I'm on the verge of doing something about it, even.
What, right now?
Well, it's so obvious that, like, nobody's home up there, you know?
Yeah.
With all that, it's like, yeah, you're screaming at yourself. You're, like, so irritated at yourself, and there's all this weird shit going on, and it's just obvious there's nobody there. There's nobody home. It's just a smattering of fucking random shit that's just, like, you know, and nobody in there even likes each other. It's like, what the fuck? No.
Yeah, that's why it just goes on screaming. We get so angry that there's nobody home. We don't know how to cope with it. So we just go on screaming, hoping that the screaming will elicit presence of someone actually being there. Doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Because you're just screaming at yourself, or that's not even true. You're just, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, just.
You'd get more out of it if you just peed into the wind. That's what drives us mad. I mean, you know, it drives everyone mad. Seekers, you could say, become a little more conscious of it, of the malevolence of self, than the so-called average person that just goes on screaming. Yeah, seekers start to become, like, aware of, like, who am I screaming at? Who's screaming at me? Yeah. Then, of course, you have to go through decades, if not lifetimes, of, you know, something like Buddhism.
Yeah, or voice dialogue therapy, or, you know.
That's right. Or giving Fred Davis a call.
Yeah, Fred Davis. Should I tell you it's only a small story, my Fred Davis story. Should I tell you?
So badly want to hear it.
I don't know who Fred Davis is, but.
Oh, you'll find out.
Oh, you got to see Fred Davis.
My dog's name is Fred, so every time you say Fred, he's like.
So what happened was that I checked out Fred's website.
Yeah.
I think maybe. He might have had some kind of, he might have spent some time with Rupert, perhaps. Maybe that's where I got the Fred kind of. Mm-hmm. I might have seen him on a Rupert, one of these things that Rupert did. I might have seen Fred there or something like that. Anyway, it's like, oh, Fred, you know, this is in the days when I believed in people getting enlightened, right?
Those days that are thankfully long gone.
And so I was like, oh, Fred's enlightened. It's like, wow, you know. And started checking out some of his videos and his website, and it's like, and he's doing these enlightenment sessions, Skype enlightenment sessions.
$300.
It's like, I mean, the general gist I got was $300 guaranteed enlightenment, you know.
Yes, that's how Fred sells it.
Yeah, and it's like,
that's how he markets it, $300 and you'll wake up.
That's right. And this was kind of
thousands and thousands of satisfied customers all over the world.
Right. Anyway, it's, you know, it's like, it was so weird. It was so different from any other thing I'd heard of this kind, you know. It's like, and I guess like many other people, I'm thinking, well, if I don't check it out, it sounds weird, but if I don't check this out, it's like, I won't know. And this is how he actually makes all his money, isn't it?
That would have been the weirdest $300 that you never spent.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, it's only $300. It's, you know, it may as well check it out and find out, even though I don't believe that this is possible.
Right.
But I can't know unless I actually check it out.
Yep.
They have to pay to find out whether or not it's going to, if there's anything in it or not.
Like any freak show.
Yeah. So I sent him an email, I think, and there was a few email interchanges, and he got me on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And, So eventually I said, okay, let's book a session. So I booked a session and paid, sent in the PayPal thing, right? And then I started getting, you know, feeling like, I'm not sure about this. This is, you know. And then other weird things happened. I mean, weird things in consciousness, in my consciousness.
Yes.
And so I sent him an email about something, and he sent me an email back saying that he was absolutely convinced, that he could reassure me that I'm almost enlightened, that you're almost enlightened, and it's going to be big. He said, I can tell the signs, right?
We don't know if almost means 10 minutes or 10 lifetimes.
That's right. So I sent him one back saying, well, if that's the case, I don't need you. So I'll have my $300 back, which is what I wanted anyway.
Ah.
I don't need, yeah, if I'm actually on the verge of enlightenment, then I don't need a session with you.
No.
So, you know, can I have my money back?
Mm-hmm.
By this time, I really didn't want to have a session with Fred. I knew I didn't want this.
Right, right.
And within about 10 minutes, the money had appeared in my PayPal account.
Mm-hmm.
And but no word from Fred. I figured he was quite pissed off about that. He shot himself in the foot. I shouldn't have said that. He probably learned something from me. He won't tell anyone that in the future.
He won't do that again.
No. what a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, Francine, you must check out Fred. I mean, he's a trip.
Fred Davis.
Yeah, Fred Davis, yeah.
All right.
That's fun. So you got cold feet. You didn't really want to have the call anyway.
No.
And he gave you a way out by telling you you were so close to enlightenment any day now.
Yeah. And then the next day I was enlightened, of course.
I figured as soon as you got the $300 back.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, I've listened to Fred's free videos, you know, YouTube things, because you're not going to get anything more from Fred in a one-on-one than you'll get from his basic presentation. And so he's a clever man, and he's got a good sense of humor, and he's, you know, interesting in his own right. And he knows, you know, non-dual lingo and Rupert-esque exercises and vocabulary to draw attention to presence and help deconstruct, right, the habits of mind and the habits of association. And that stuff is, you know, beautiful and fun, and it's endearing, and it's a great ride. But it's not a guarantee of self-realization and being able to integrate, you know, wonderful philosophies or philosophy thought bubbles is, you know, great, nice, but it's not just, and Fred should bill it legitimately. He should say, hey, we're going to enter into some really interesting, you know, in engaging philosophic and spiritual dialogue aimed at encouraging the recognition of presence and discouraging the habits of mind that are, you know, self-tormenting. And if he sold that for $300, it'd be like, great, because he can do that. I think he can assist people that way. But
is he an older guy?
Yeah.
That kind older. Of dresses like preppy, like you wouldn't expect that he would even be interested in this stuff sort of thing?
No, he's pretty well
got
silver hair, and he dresses business casual.
Business casual, yeah. He looks like he doesn't look like super hippied out. He looks kind of like
he's really hick. What you call that kind of accent? That southern hick accent.
Yeah, yeah. I did listen to some of his stuff. I forget.
Yeah. Right.
About these people.
I think what he's doing is useful and fun, and you know, maybe it's worth $300 to a lot of people.
Mm.
Billing it the way that he bills it, I think, is blatantly misleading. But yeah. That's Fred.
That is Fred.
I couldn't handle something about him. I just couldn't even. I listened for a little bit, and I was like,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he is.
There's a egotism that's just, like, so boastful that I couldn't get past it. I'm just like, yeah, I get it. You're great. You got this.
Yeah. He's like, systemically annoying.
You don't know what anyone else has got, do you? You have no idea what he's got. You know, another person, a person can say anything. You know, it's like, but you have no idea what their experience is.
They will. They're just like Fred. They'll say anything to get your $300.
That's right. I mean, it's just a total unknown quantity what is happening in anyone else's experience. Just another way of knowing. See, the only thing that's ever really, you know, after listening to non-dual sang for 10 years or whatever it is, you know, like ardently.
Right.
The only thing that's ever made any real impact and made any difference to me is Peter Brown emphasizing that this is a felt presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's the pointing out that before, you know, after birth, in between birth and becoming a verbalizing being, a thinking being. I mean, this is all theoretical, obviously, because there's no memory of this or anything, but seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smell, sensory experience was happening with no thinking. So how, it's like, in what sense, in what, you know, what was the experience of being at that time? Which is the same as the experience of being now, you know, what was the experience of seeing before it was thought of as seeing? What did it feel like? This is, you know, it's this, it, this, this, the discovery that thinking about seeing is completely different to the experience of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a completely different kind of, the experience of seeing is a different kind of substance than just, you know, than this idea of looking through eyes and seeing stuff. The mechanical idea of seeing.
Yeah, even that's, even that's a bridge, because you could say, there's a palpable signature of not self, which is not zero, and is not dependent at all on what is appearing through five senses, or the way in which the five senses are being felt. Using the five senses as a gate to articulate the difference between the universe created by thought, the universe created by words, and the actual naked texture of conscious contact is a great bridge to wean one from hyper-reliance on mentation. And then that bridge becomes subtler still. Because even the recording of light or sound or taste or touch is, what could you say? It's, apparitionally superficial.
Even the recording of it, as a person, you mean?
Well, recording it as a person or not a person. Yeah, right? In other words, all that is appearing in and as consciousness, including what we refer to as the five senses, conscious contact, thought, feeling, sensation, emotion, time, story, space, repercussion, is apparitionally appearing.
Mm.
And yeah, so this withdrawal is not a renunciation, right? Because a renunciation is typically some kind of a refusal. It's not a refusal. And the withdrawal never hits a wall. You never back up from demonstrative consciousness and then hit a wall. All you do is keep backing up. Right? Whatever is appearing, you could say you back up, you shy away from. It doesn't capture your attention. It doesn't become anything. So you can play with, you know, the curious texture of engagement as a positivity, like Peter Brown likes to do, right? Instead of the banal refusal of, you know, Buddhism or Hinduism or Christianity, refusing sin, refusing body, refusing attraction, refusing aversion, right? All of that stupidity. You appreciate the positivity or the radiant nature of, right, conscious contact. The effusion, fantastic effusion of consciousness and conscious contact. And that's cool. And without having a quarrel with that or being antithetical to that, you can also see this as a ongoing withdrawal from the implications of consciousness itself, which is not a refusal of its...
Sorry, you can see what as a withdrawal?
What's present. You simply withdraw from what's present, including every symptom or hint of yourself. You don't have to be interested in the five senses or what appears in them. You don't have to be interested in thought and memory. You don't have to be interested in imagining that you were once a person and now that you're, you know, unwinding from having been a person.
Okay, so you don't have to do any work at all.
No, no.
You don't have to engage in any kind of... Okay,
yes.
That's an interesting...
Yes, right. And so you're again, you know, you're not renouncing or withdrawing as a thing to do.
Mm.
You're just... You know, emptiness itself, nonplussed by whatever might be appearing as consciousness, as conscious contact.
Okay,
there is no but then.
No, I'm saying I'm but thening. I'm asking you. Oh, this is a question. That's a lead into a question.
Yeah.
Right. So what I'm going to ask you is, because this is a new, you know, it's what I'm hearing. I'd say what I'm making of what I'm hearing here is, you know, I'm not making much of it, let's say. And so it's like I want to just ask you something. I mean, it you know, the way I'm interpreting what I'm, the words I'm hearing you saying, is it's, you know, it's like this, seeing that this has nothing to do, it's like this is just happening spontaneously. There's nothing you know, there's nothing to think about here.
Nothing to engage in at all. Not even the kind phrase of "this is happening spontaneously." That's saying too much.
It's saying too much. Oh dear. God. Right. It's
your present experience can't actually be occupied by you. Try as you might, for any of us, screaming, grasping, insisting, having an improved spiritual perspective than I had yesterday is all bullshit.
Yes. Weird.
Back to weird.
Yeah.
The fun tickle here is that in the celebration of radiant presence, right? The effusion of the miraculous. There is also, you could say, effortless disengagement with any and everything that appears. As it appears, in what it appears. So you're profoundly interested, but you can't find what it is you're interested in. You're disembodied. Disembodied availability, disembodied euphoria, which is non-clinging. Right? That's a yogic, can we say, a yogic metaphor of thy will be done, which has nothing at all to do with circumstances and events. As a born creature, you're getting under the skin of the will of God, because you're no longer anthropomorphizing God as having an interest in, you know, human accomplishment or human travail. This is the Higgs bosonic God. This is the gravitational wave God. This is the God that underlies any and all things manifest. The God that has no interest in anything at all, and therefore you could say permits, though no permission is necessary, for everything to be exactly the way that it is. So you're cascading back away from anything that could possibly trigger a concept, trigger an interest, trigger an implication, trigger a ramification.
Trigger an attempt to...
yes.
Any kind of attempt to yes. realize something, to kind of, to, you know, to...
Yes. Yeah, you first have to make this more solid than it is in order to be interested in realizing something. What the hell is it that's going to be realized? And what vessel are you going to put it in? Where are you going to store it or patent it?
You're trying to like tidy up an infinite fractal, like not tidy a bowl. Not an option.
Yeah, the Jains sweep the path in front of them so that they can avoid killing sentient insects. Yeah, but it's like you said, it's not tidyable. No amount of sweeping will help. So most of Peter's, you know, yoga, a good part of it, and wisely so, is a bridge to wean us from the hypnotism of circumstances and events, from the world created through verbiage and concept, conclusion and implication.
So it's like the old habits the habits of mind, let's say, of its kind of structures of learning, structures of discovering, structures of achieving. It's kind of these kind of habitual modes of getting something, acquiring some knowledge, acquiring some skill, acquiring some state. they like kind of kick in subtly, no matter what, no matter how much a teacher, let's say, is talking about this.
Samsara is destined to beguile nirvana, but that is nirvana.
That's why, like, just you can't. You, like, at some point, you're like, just pay no attention because this is insane.
Like, samsara is not the enemy. Samsara is not meant to be avoided at all cost or meditated away. Samsara is the right is spooning with nirvana as itself. And that's cool.
So, how do you do this then, Jeff? How do you go about this?
You see, it doesn't really matter what you do or you don't do, or what you feel and what you don't feel, or how you may suffer under the thumb, you know, of an unfriendly universe or an unfriendly God, or how you may thrive, right? Mm. On the wings of a friendly God or a friendly universe. What would absolute freedom from self-interest feel like?
Not a clue.
The mistake that, you know, many teachings and teachers and seekers make is trying to cultivate an advantage over samsara for the sake of lasting utility for me. You can see the instant that you take this sufficiently seriously to want to remedy it, you are knee-deep in samsara as nirvana, simply suffering under the weight of preference. Suffering under the weight of individuation. Which includes faith-based living, which is also suffering under the weight of individuation. Entering into a devotional relationship with Christ's consciousness so that his will might have something to do with your will. It's a game of thrones.
Interesting. I mean, new for me. New, so interesting in that this is like a stopper in the tracks.
Yeah. You don't really want someone to untie the ropes of the tracks that you're tied to while the 750 Freightliner is coming down. You want the Freightliner to take you out. Somebody runs over and starts to untie the ropes and you start cursing at them, you know, trying to bite them.
No, this is radical. Mm-hmm. I mean, thought does this, doesn't it? It kind of negates itself. It, you know, it's like
no, it doesn't. Thought doesn't do and has never done anything.
It does if it starts thinking about itself.
No, it's thought. Thought can't be held responsible for anything, either constructive or harmful, or constructive or deconstructive. Thought is only, you know, music. The effervescent of a musical score appearing presently. Hmm. Yeah, which is not good or bad. I mean, there's no reason to celebrate or decry the appearance of thought, right? It's just a spontaneous musical score. It's like Beethoven. Thought's not binding. Doesn't have any influence or implication. It doesn't really give you any evidence that you chose anything, or that you thought about anything, or that you even considered things and then decided on a sentiment or a path of action. Thought is absolutely limited as artifact. Even, you know, getting to the moon or destroying the environment, we can't hold thought responsible. Thought's only artifact. It's not causal. And it can't actually do anything. Because whatever appears is, right, it's a closed loop of dualistic reference. Right? Thought is a closed loop of dualistic reference. Because everything that thought is referring to is referential, not actual. So thought arises spontaneously and is capable of playing chess with itself and running scenarios, triggering or being triggered by more subtle, you know, emotional or somatic sentiment. But that's that. You can withdraw entirely from the fermentation and fomentation of thought without feeling bound by its presence. And it needn't stop. You are the sanguine and disinterested spaciousness in which consciousness pretends to hook your attention. Get you or anyone all twisted up in what's happening and what's not happening. What will happen and why it should or shouldn't. And, you know, whether Jesus is going to cut me a break or not.
And if that is happening,
mm-hmm.
I mean, which it is happening. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
The way things, you know, it's like, so everything's okay.
Well, hang on. Things are not okay, but they're not not okay. Because okay means what? You're
I mean, there's nothing to kind of I mean
that's right that's it. Yeah, you can't take yourself seriously enough to find out that things are okay or that they're not okay, and or why. That they might be or might not be.
Oh, dear. This is
You can place yourself in whatever position you feel like placing yourself and make things okay or not okay and change your mind a second later. That's cool too. They're okay. They're not okay. They're okay. They're not okay. What things? I forget what I was even thinking about.
Oh, is that pizza?
Pizza for breakfast. That's okay.
Cold pizza for breakfast.
It's the only way to go.
Cold pizza for breakfast.
Well, you know, I chose hanging out with you fuckers over eating a normal breakfast, which was probably a bad move, but...
Okay. Is it dark there? Is that a window? Is it dark? Is it dark?
It's a door to another room.
Okay.
Yeah, it's raining. It's pretty dry.
Uh-huh. Mm.
Notice that whatever you may be interested in, feeling, thinking, expressing, conjuring, considering, opining upon, is, as you said earlier, you know, spontaneously arising. So you first have to construct a universe that you can then have constructive opinions about. You have to construct the universe in order for you to remedy what's unpleasant about it.
Mm. And like the entirety of your experience seemingly just turned into a fucking fucked up therapy session. It's not enjoyable.
Sorry, say that again?
It seems to just turn everything into a real fucked up therapy session. That's like your the entirety of your existence.
Hmm. So I walk around thinking, like, sometimes, especially in the mornings, it's like, thought is like some kind of energy. It's just like some kind of, like, future is, the past is thought, space is thought, time is thought, memory is thought, thought is what? Some kind of, I don't know, some kind of energy of some kind.
Well, yeah, what you're saying in a kind way is you don't know what the fuck is going on.
That's right. That's right. All that's here, it's like all that's here is this stuff that I'm calling energy. The body is energy. It's right. Just this sizzling kind of fucking thing. And
cool.
It's just like this is just this energy.
And it's okay. Just like, yeah. Or not.
And yet it's fucking amazing. It
could be or not.
Well, I mean, it amazes me that.
Why not? If you're getting mileage out of noticing consciousness and energy in a more subtle manner, stay with it. Why pull the needle out of your arm?
Yeah.
If you're newfound or old-found fascination with sizzling energy is enjoyable. Enjoy it.
Well, it's like at the moment, it's you know, it's like a thought has been, you know, is like has been the fucking dictatorship. It's been.
No, the dictatorship is not thought.
Okay, but it's been manifesting as thought.
Well, the dictatorship is subtler than what we refer to as thought. Right? It's a compulsive habit. Placing yourself in experience as a divergent creature.
Right.
Thoughts, again, it's just an artifact of that.
Okay. Yeah.
The tyranny is the original tickle of samsara, which, as it turns out, is, beautiful, magical, mysterious. And then as we see it as beautiful, magical, and mysterious, strangely, it becomes less and less binding, which is a symptom of whatever this is or isn't, cutting itself some slack. Maybe that's what Fred was seeing when he reluctantly gave you back your money. What some people will do for $300.
Aye, absolutely.
Yeah. So you can see all you've got, really, and you're not alone. That's all we all got, is just some, stream of cascading ideation, some stream of cascading implication. You want to hold something responsible for something. But nothing is responsible for nothing. Nothing's going on.
Hold something responsible so bad, or at least in my case, it's funny. I'm like, I'll kill myself.
I'll take
myself out in order to validate that everyone else is fucked up. I mean, yep. That's how insane. It's like, dude, what?
That's right. Here lies Francine, finally validated Stroman.
That's insane.
It's one way to go.
It's true, I want to be like deathly ill so they'll all see, what assholes they were.
That's right, you show them. Get them. Sick them.
How come there are more people around?
How come
that's like all I ever meet in my reality is fucking terrestrial. Yeah.
That's right.
And they're no fun. They can't even play with them. You can't have fun with them at all.
Well, that's how samsara operates. It makes you think you're from here. The nirvanic tickle is when you start to realize you're not from around here.
There isn't any here. I mean, what anyone else is here is you kind of assume that the here that they believe in is the same one that looks exactly the same and feels the same as the one that you remember believing in all your life.
That's why you have to abandon all your old friends.
Yeah.
For their sake.
Absolutely.
You have to abandon them because they still think they're from around here, and you realize you're not. And they can never understand that you're not from around here because they're still from around here. So they impose that on you. You want to walk into a bar with, sneakers and jeans and a plaid shirt, and they insist on putting cowboy boots and a hat on your head. Hey, you're not from around here. Duh.
Oh, God. This is funny. See, I just don't have any fun like this or, the people that I get to see.
Well, people are people. They think they're people. They think they're from around here. They don't know how to imagine themselves being otherwise. And quoting Nirsagadatta simply will not do it. Turning to spiritual authorities does not release you from being around here.
No.
Being from here. Yeah, no, you have to go insane quite on your own reconnaissance. You have to discover that you're not from around here. You can't rely on dead or living gurus to do that for you. Because who else is going to give you the permission? Right? Ultimately, the permission to be not from around here has to come from you. I don't care how clever and right on Rupert might be or how clever Fred Davis might be. The permission to see that you're not from around here has to come from you.
Yeah.
And then everyone can just fuck off.
Rupert insists that awareness is the, you know, is the big daddy. Awareness is the, you know, is like, awareness is what this is.
He would be mistaken.
Well, it's clearly not the case. I mean, not knowing what he means by awareness, what he means by, you know, what that might mean, but at least, you know, I mean, awareness and experience are not two different. How could you separate? How can you draw a line?
If you use a word to suggest that you know and others should find out what this is and what it's about, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you're just leading people on a wild goose chase because you're never going to find it.
No, you can't find anything because all you're actually doing is disappearing.
On that note, I'm going to have to disappear. I got to go walk some doggies in the rain.
Oh, it's good. Someone's got something to do.
Bye, guys.
See you later.
Nice to see you, Francine.
Bye, Barry.
Nice to hear you. The actual presence of presence, I mean, the presence of this is like, it's fucking awesome, isn't it? It's like,
can be.
I mean, it's awesome in that, from having thought that, you know, totally under the spell of the idea that the assumption of what it is, you know, the assumption that it's just this, that it's what everyone else thinks it is. That we're all walking around in this and no one's asking what it is because everybody knows what it is and it's life and it's like, and no one needs to ask anyone else. No one needs to talk about it because everyone just, you know, you kind of just get on with eating your, you know, going out to dinner and getting married and having kids. And
that's right. Living la vida loca in the zombie apocalypse.
Yes, as if you kind of, as if anyone asks anyone, what is this? If, you know, if like an alien arrived from a different paradigm and said, what is this? They'd say, you know, you could ask anyone what this is and they'll tell you because everyone knows. Of course, everyone knows what it is, you know. When you actually realize that you don't know what this is and that what this is, at least for me, when the mind, let's say, goes, it's like, none of that is true. None of that, it's not any of that. It's like, it's totally untouchable. It's like, it's a fucking, you know, you can't actually,
As you feel yourself presently liquidating, that becomes a whole new field of, you know, interest, or a subtle field of availability, which is just ongoing liquidation, non-grasping. But it's subtler than non-grasping, because, you know, non-grasping sounds like it could be something that would be willfully deployed. But non-grasping can't be willfully deployed, because that would be just another form of grasping. So you don't really have any association at all. I mean, you're empty of any association at all. Simple as that. You can still speak and get a cup of coffee. And you can see the, let's just call it the pressure, you know, the ongoing invitation to attempt to occupy present experience through a conceptual framework, through the profound convention of naming things, using words to make something about something, using words to turn this into something or being about something, and therefore having a causal implication, causal deliverable. Once this has a causal deliverable, it's no longer nothing at all. Now it's something about which you have an opinion or are bound to, or can be, or that it can be enjoyed or not enjoyed. So it's very tricky, which is why the yoga is, you know, lovely. And you could say takes some attention. To feel yourself as cascading liquidation, which is not nothing, relieves you of the impulse to be hooked by anything at all. And that's not antithetical to radiant presence, which is effusively demonstrative.
Nice.
Toys R Us.
Right.
You know, talk of self-realization for $300 is an excruciating, you know, bastardization and commercialization of what you and I might refer to as actuality, cascading liquidation. If I jump on the internet and create, you know, a $300 phone call to discover that you are cascading liquidation, I mean, how many callers am I going to get? What? $300 for what? Cascading liquidation. This guy should be in a hospital. A padded room. I'm going to give this guy $300 so he can finally commit himself to a padded room.
Cascading liquidation. Yes. Cascading Liquidation Limited.
All right. LTD.
Yeah.
We're not talking about relief from suffering. Yeah. Just not.
No.
So it seems like a lot, there's a fair, it's pretty easy to kind of to steer a seeker towards noticing something that, you know, that they've not noticed before, which feels pretty kind of shocking, you know, in a given moment. Like, you know, yes. you can't find a thinker of your thoughts or
that stuff,
or noticing that you know, the present experience is all that you've ever known. It could be something like that, you know. And it's like
absolutely,
and it's quite a shock, and it's it can, you know, it can seem like it's, you know, that it's really it's really worth £1,000 for a retreat to come away with this kind of.
And it is.
Yeah. And it's a kind of start. It's like a kind of, it's something. It's something to work with. It's.
Well, we're talking about a radical shift from, you know, paying homage and loyalty to dualistic Buddhist and Hindu, Judeo-Christian or Islamic thinking, and moving into a subtler companion realm, punctuated more by, you know, the Kashmiri Shaivistic or Dzogchen, you know, kind of teachings. But even those are way too complicated, way too engaging, way too much. You know, to have to go through any kind of process at all, any kind of hazing to join the fraternity or sorority of yourself is absurd, which includes all of the bullshit you get in Dzogchen and Kashmiri Shaivism and elsewhere. But we have to burn off, you know, the habit of, right, referential durability. We have to see that, oh, there really is nothing to do. There really is no knowledge or truth. There is no destination. There is no purification. There is nothing that begets anything, nothing that becomes anything. This is not about anything. There's no finality. There's no release from suffering. And a different kind of intelligence, different quality of intelligence lights up when it's a non-reactive intelligence. Right? Because being relieved of suffering is reactive. And I mean, of course, we get it. There's a lot of suffering to go around, and a lot of relief from suffering to go around. So that's all cool, no problem. But one starts to get a scent of a different quality of presence, being, humor, intelligence, elasticity, the awakening, you could say, of the energy body, if you want to use that model. Right, tingling, scintillating, curiously radiant and immersive nature of present experience. When you can start to appreciate a view, palpable view, sensual, as in felt, understanding of the cascading nature of liquidation. Euphoric or disembodied euphoria. See, not knowing is not, you know, a commitment once made, right? Not knowing is ongoingly immersive. you can even retreat from the probes that you set out or set forth to know or engage with reality. Right? Just release all the probes.
Say that again?
You can release all the probes that you use to engage with present reality, right? Like thinking is a probe. The five senses are a probe. Having an idea is a probe, right? Because they're all evocative.
An experiment is a probe.
Yes, that's right. So you're sending out a constant stream of experimental probes so that you can piece together a cogent three-dimensional reality from the information you're getting back from the probes. Right? That's how you construct the universe, actually.
So
which isn't miraculous. Yeah. And it's all occurring.
Disengage from that.
Yeah, you can disengage completely from any and all probes. So now there's no... You're not seeking to engage or create a reality that you can then have opinions about. Right? You could say it's the absolute cessation of micromanagement.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's fun. You're not interested in anything that's appearing, knowing about anything that's appearing, naming anything that's appearing, being bound by anything that's appearing. Being hopeful, being enlightened by it. Radiant disinterest. Cascading liquidation.
Radiant disinterest.
Hmm?
Radiant disinterest.
Yes. That's what you got.
It's amazing. It's like, it's what you're saying is it feels like it's weird. It's like it's like totally the opposite direction in a sense to every well, we, you know, it. It's a, you know, it's almost like saying notice what is without even bothering to, notice it. I mean,
yeah, there's no noticing and there's no what is. Noticing what is already too thick.
Right.
Yeah, so, don't notice shit, because there's just, you know, is a dream. Or not. Right. Anything you put on the table can only be referential. Then once it's referential, then it appears to have some kind of palpable or consequential solidity, which is only imagined.
So, you know, the mind is saying, the thought is saying, well, what the hell do I do with myself then?
Well, everyone can just fuck off, and that pretty much includes you.
Right. I mean, it's so fucking, to me, it's what I'm hearing is so radical. I mean, it's so radical that it's like, you can't conceptualize this.
No.
You can't conceptualize.
That's the fun of it.
That's what I was trying to say before. It's like conceptualizing has been the only mode of procedure, the only mode of engaging.
There you go. That's what I was referring to as sending out probes. You're sending out data probes as your principal interface or engagement with whatever this is or isn't. And then you get information from the probes, which is interpreted by you. And you construct the appearance of a secularly existing three-dimensional world other than yourself. Now you're fucked. Just you. Now you're born.
Wow. Interesting. This is amazing already, what, you know, what I'm hearing here. Amazing in that, you know, it can't be, this is like the first, it's like the first time of X, you know, it's like, well, let's say, I can't even say the first time, but, in a sense, it's like, it's, you know, recognizing what you're saying. I mean, there's some kind of recognition that this has to be so, because the only other mode, you know, conceptualization is the only mode that, the only other possibility is two possibilities here. One is conceptualization, and the other one is something else, right? But there's something else, the conceptualization being the only mode to date, let's say, or the only available mode of understanding, then conceptualization automatically wants to, you know, the conceptual, in a sense, conceptualization is being told there's something being suggested here that you can't grasp. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in even, you're not, you know, this is not for you. Mm-hmm. What's being suggested here is not for you. It's not for, it's not for
you. You do not survive the cessation of probes. Mm. But you don't need to. Mm. You don't become enlightened meat.
I just, you know, completely kind of at the moment taken with this kind of interesting, simple kind of meeting of conceptualization and this kind of the suggestion, let's say, it's not even suggestion, but this, that it's obvious the conceptualization is a useless tool. And it's never ever, you know, it never has and never could it can never lead to anything but more conceptualization. And if it's trying to figure something out, it's never going to figure it out.
No.
Just find something else to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, conceptualization is the signature of, you know, samsaric implication.
Right.
Yeah. Conceptualization creates and sustains you as a durable creature in the game that could possibly benefit from something like understanding or self-realization. Freedom from the impulse to set probes and get something from the probes, and then construct a reality field in which you imagine yourself to be other than or one with. The cessation of that entire reflex, you could maybe refer to that, whatever it is, as self-realization. But it's not a thing anymore. It's not an attainment. It's not an idea. It doesn't benefit the meat. It doesn't have to be the end of suffering. Who are we to be interested or demanding of the end of suffering?
It's such a ridiculous concept anyway. I mean, just you can't even imagine the end of suffering, never mind even consider it as a it's like, how could anyone possibly imagine?
Why kick a gift horse in the mouth and insist on the end of suffering?
It's a weird one, isn't it? It's weird that it's like all of my life, let's say, or all of my memory, it seems that there has been this kind of absolutely kind of this hope, this kind of this, you know, it's almost, it's a belief and a hope that that there was a way out of something into something else, and that the something else would be like there wouldn't be any dangers there, and it's like everything there would be okay. There was some kind of heaven to be found, some kind of safe place, not heaven, but like there was some, release.
It's interesting. The story, the movie Risen, the Tribune, that was his title, the Tribune, was craving at the end of a life of incredible, violence and, policing.
So he's talking, is this a Roman guy?
Yeah, the Roman Tribune.
Okay.
Was asked by Pontius Pilate in a nice, warm bath what he wanted. It was a great, great interview. I mean, it was a great conversation between Pontius Pilate and the Tribune. What do you want, Tribune? Money, power, wealth, family, and Pontius Pilate, with just one word, would say, and why? And you'll become, right? So he was leading him through the story of his finality. The simplest little urgencies. It's a beautiful scene. Yeah. And at the end of it, the Tribune finally says, to enjoy peace, a day without death. And later on in the film, the Tribune has a conversation with Jesus, Yeshua, having risen from the grave and reconstituted himself as a palpable living body, sits with him privately on the rocks. And in that conversation, Jesus, who knows that the Tribune was at his death, at his homicide, and forgives him, of course, with no hesitation, basically grants him his lifelong wish, a day without death. Mm-hmm. It's just, beautiful to see the flowering of that soul. And then the Tribune ends up wandering off after, Jesus ascends finally into absolute light. He doesn't follow the other disciples. Right, he goes off on his own to wander peacefully and tell others the remarkable story of the Son of the Living God, and his life is forever transformed. You could call it Christ-like perpetuity, as another day without death. You can't beat that shit.
What's the movie called? Arisen, yeah.
Well, without the A, risen.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very tastefully, engagingly done without being, sappily Christian. Well, thanks for your company this morning.
Well, thanks to you, Jeff. Thank you. Right, I'm really glad that you. I had just been, I kind of pulled away from it's amazing. But anyway, it's really nice to re-engage with you.
Pleasure. I hope I didn't chase you down. I hadn't heard from you. I just was kind of sending it up.
Really glad you did. I mean, you know, it's like what I've been hearing today is fucking, you know, it's like, you know, it's, I couldn't imagine hearing anything better than this. I couldn't imagine a better conversation than this. It's just,
yeah, cold pizza and this, can't beat it.
That's great. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, good. I'll see you again.
I hope so. I mean, definitely. Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, hook me in.
Rock on.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
Bye.
Bye.